Welcome to Easel Talk, the podcast for easelinsight.com, with your hosts, Phil Stark and Gabor Svagrik. This podcast is created for artists by artists. To follow along with today's discussion, remember to download the show notes at easelinsight.com/blog. And now let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to Easel Talk. My name is Gabor Svagrik.
And I'm Phil Stark.
And today's topic we titled, What is Realistic Painting?
Yep.
It's a big title. Not the words, but the where we can go with this.
Something you can easily talk about in just 20 minutes.
That's right. We're gonna tell you everything in 20 minutes. So
right.
I'm going to try. And, you know, all the podcasts are always our own experiences, and you might have a different experience in your life or in your artistic journey, and that's what makes art great, and it's the journey, not necessarily the, because I don't think there's an actual place you arrive to.
Right.
There's no arriving point. It's not like getting on a plane and getting off to your destination.
It's not like becoming an engineer.
No. That's right. Yeah.
This is more touchy-feely.
Touchy-feely. We're all about feelings here. I guess, was this Webster's? That's where you got the definition for...
Yeah, start with the
realism.
Definition.
Yeah. The theory or practice of fidelity in art and literature to nature or to real life and to accurate representation without idolization. That's kind of what it gives in... It's kind of funny reading sometimes. What's the definition of art? Try to break it down into put it into a box, and here you go. That's what it is. But at least you can look up the meaning of it. But obviously, if you're actually doing it, you're gonna start defining, or understanding, I should say, more of what realism is.
Right.
And
I think that also means then that photographic painting or photorealism, they would not be the same as realism, because you're not using nature, you're not looking to nature, you're looking to a photograph. So a difference there. And the paintings look different also.
You can definitely see someone that actually painted, literally standing on the spot and painted. You know, it could be a landscape, could be a city scene, a figure, doesn't matter what. Somebody that's painted from life on a, fairly consistent basis versus somebody that only uses photographs, there's like a night and day difference.
Right,
And you don't understand that until you actually done it yourself to see it. So if you only paint from photographs, you might maybe not understand what we're talking about and like in this moment about that, to see the difference between the vivid, not vivid, but these are very soft, subtle shifts that only someone, again, that painted from life on a fairly constant basis will see. Now, does that make it a better painting just because you painted from life all the time? That could be up for argument, but there's definitely, Phil and I are drawn more to poetry, and you get more poetic because you painted from life. There's poetry, there's looseness.
You could consider it a more honest attempt from life than maybe from a photograph. But we all use photographs. So. Yeah.
But the drawing part is the one that you cannot get around. I don't care if you paint from photographs or drawn from life. You have to know how to draw. And projecting is not the same as drawing.
Right.
Understanding drawing.
Yeah.
Because you're taking a mechanical... It's all mechanical, basically, and you see it at the end. It's stiff. It's mechanical.
Yeah.
So
today, photography has changed what realism means. We think of, when we're using photography, we think of that as realism. That when you look at the photograph, that's what realism is. And of course, it really isn't. You lose atmosphere. It's a totally different color sense in a photograph. Proportions can be wrong. Things are flattened.
Yeah.
So really study realism then would be to be outside more.
Yeah, for a painterly painter, when somebody says, oh, that looks photorealistic, that's like the worst thing. So don't ever say to somebody, a painterly painter, that looks like a photograph, because that's like the worst thing.
Yeah, Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately,
not a compliment.
Yeah, we don't want it to look like a photograph, because I mean, that's something, maybe a warning sign. Somebody says that, it means you're getting too tight.
Right. Exactly.
If that's what you want to do, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong being tight.
Yeah.
There's some great painters that are tight, you know, but they have their drawing down, their values, colors, design, and all those important things too. So.
And that's been a motivator for me, because several times, you know, I've asked other artists for a critique of my work. Two or three times I've been told you're looking at photography too much, and I can tell it in your paintings because your shadows are getting flat. There's no reflected light in them, no atmosphere in the shadows. Generally, if my paintings start getting darker, I need to get outside. I'm relying too much on photography.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it doesn't mean that what I paint outside is necessarily great paintings, but they sharpen my eye for color sense, even better composition when you're outside.
Yeah, and the shadows, that's a good point, is that your shadows will look dead if you really don't paint from life. Because, again, you're copying a mechanical eye, which is the camera, and cameras do not tell the exact picture. The human eye, when you're standing in front of the subject matter, is the one that has no filter. You know, gets straight into the mind. You know,
right.
So that's why, you know, if you want more life to your paintings, you have to work from life. I think that's, I'm sorry, but I'm not gonna. If you stand in front and try to argue that point, you're gonna lose. Because I'm not gonna budge on that.
And we're not saying don't use photographs, because we all use photography. But for learning, you have to be outside, I think.
Yeah.
Or to learn the best.
Yeah. And again, we use photographs all the time. You know, Phil and I use photos or the monitor, whatever we want to use these days. But, you know, we logged enough hours in outside that we can take those experiences. All it is just a human mind trained. And you become your own sort of Photoshop in your head. You know, when you look at that photograph, that the shadows are too dark, the lights are too light, you know, that's why we don't talk about color that often, because it's important. But you know, in the scheme of things, those other things are more important. The drawing, the values, those are the more important things.
Yeah.
That's why we don't put too much emphasis, even in our classes, on color as much, because most of the problems that we see with students is those fundamental things. It's drawing, design, and value. Those are the two or three big things that most students are struggling with.
Yeah.
So,
and I think too, when you have the realistic period of painting, which would be maybe before Impressionism, mid 1800s, they didn't rely on color as much. It was more value related.
Yeah.
Atmosphere, edges, value. It wasn't until the Impressionists that color became the focus of suggesting light with color instead of just value.
Yeah, and so there were some tight painters even back then before they mentioned the camera. So you can't say the camera really, you know, caused it. It's you know, matter of preference to the painter, the artist themselves, of how they paint. I mean, we're amazed that, I mean, the amount of work that was done before the invention of camera. It's, you know, museums are filled with the beautiful paintings.
Yeah.
So. In some ways, the camera, I think, hurt us, or it can hurt if it's not used correctly. So that's why, again, we're more poetic painters. Painters are more, you know, looser painters. So nobody comes into our class and say, you know what, I'm really loose, I want to tighten up. And it just doesn't happen. They want to naturally just want to paint a little bit more loose.
Right.
We see more mystery. It's sort of like a book. You don't want the writer to write out every single word in the English language to describe some, or, you know, describe things. It's the left in between stuff is I think that's where poetry, you know, comes from. So
exactly.
I mean, so, but you can be a tight painter. I mean, I know some tight painters that I really like their work. So
yeah.
I'm not against tight paintings. Any means. I gravitate towards more loose poetic work, but that's just a personal choice.
Yeah.
That's just style. That has nothing to do with how painting, or if it's a successful painting or not. So,
and some of that comes from, I think, painting what you know as well as what you see.
Mm-hmm.
We think of realism as copying exactly what's there, but it's more interpreting. And I think the more we paint, practice painting, we start to understand what it means to suggest depth or to suggest form. And then you start to understand how to achieve that so that you're painting what you know. And if I want some mountains to go back, to recede in the distance, I know I'm going to make those colors cooler compared to what's in front, despite what I may see. So I'm kind of incorporating what I know as well as what I see. So to me, it's not a literal interpretation of what I see exactly. And some of them might disagree. But for me, it helps to understand why I'm making something cooler or warmer. And I don't always see it in nature that way. I think it has to, too, because our canvas is flat. It's two-dimensional, and we're looking at something that's three-dimensional. So if we're not thinking in terms of value to make things have more volume or depth or sunlight or shadow, we're going to miss some of what's really there.
Yeah, and again, that's why you probably heard another podcast that we did, is make sure you get those fundamental things down. You have to have those things down. It's kind of like a journey on this road that you're just kind of getting on that road once you understand the fundamentals, and then you can kind of walk along that road, and there's all these other smaller roads that go whichever way, but you have to start walking that road by understanding the, you know, the fundamentals. And it kind of ties in probably to almost every podcast that we do, that fundamental thing. I know it's probably saying, I know I have to get my values down, I know, but there's no, you can't skip over those fundamental things.
Right.
Just can't. You're going to be constantly be frustrated. And the frustration most likely comes from one of these things.
Yeah.
Where you don't have your drawing down, you don't have your values down, design. So those are the big two, three things that you have to be better at. And the only way you're going to get better at that is just by practicing.
Yeah, put the time in.
Yeah, put the time in.
And if you really enjoy painting, you enjoy that process of the practice, messing up,
yeah,
trying to figure out how it went wrong. And that's how you get better. It's when you don't enjoy that struggle that painting is, you know, kind of drops.
Work.
Drops by the wayside.
When it feels like work, stop. Basically. You know, that's with any craft. If it feels like work, you got to stop. You got to, maybe that's not the thing for you. I don't know.
It could be.
It's that.
If you don't enjoy the practice, then.
Because the practice will give you ultimately that nice painting one day or whatever. And
Yeah,
so, but again, you know, if you paint tight, it's okay. It's great. Go, you know, continue painting tight if that's your thing. That's not the problem most often. It's not just, it's not your style painting. It's most often the problem is not getting those under, you know, those fundamentals down. So that's why we're always hard on you guys about that, to make sure you have those things down.
Another good way to study realism or to understand what it is to go to some good art museums, and there's a lot of them around.
Yeah.
And even look at some of the websites, a lot of the museums have their full collection online. But look at the beginning of a landscape painting in the 1300s and just see how it progressed, how styles changed, but the focus was, you know, still on the light. Maybe it went more linear at first and then became more value-oriented. And then from value-oriented became more color-oriented. But you can see a progression of how realism has changed through the ages of painting.
Yeah, and it's probably a good thing. You know, things change. They don't stay the same. Impressionism opened door to abstract paintings, basically. That's what it did. It gave a license to that, because before then, even Impressionism was looked down upon. They thought they were crazy. And then once that was more accepted, then, you know, the pure abstraction, you know, pieces came in. And then, you know, I think there was a misunderstanding along the way. And
yeah,
a lot of goofy things came out of that. And but realism, again, what is real? You know, ultimately, what you see with your own eyes we call it quote unquote real.
Mm-hmm.
That's real. After that, it's a painting is not real. A photograph is not real. It's just mechanical. Photography is mechanical, and painting, you know, it's definitely with mud and pigment and oil and pigment, and we, you know, we have to mimic first. Actually, that's what I was thinking. But first, we mimic, right, to understand things, and then hopefully the painter's inner being comes out. But you cannot have the inner being come out without, again, being decent with those fundamental things.
Yeah, we can learn to interpret what we see once we understand the fundamentals. Yeah. So,
and generally, people are pretty good with copy. If you copy a master's works and you look at it, it's like, wow, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? Well, the reason that you're pretty good is because you're copying somebody else's formula.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to call it formula, but somebody else's technique that they figured out over many years. That's why it looks pretty good, because you copied that thing. But, you know, try to do that, you know, that if you think you're that good, then do it on your own subject, and see where you're at. That's right. Where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
You're like, well, maybe I'm that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one thing to copy. It's another thing to see correctly to interpret what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And it helps think in terms of how do you interpret. If you interpret in terms of light, you know, suggesting what the light's doing, I think you're off on a better track rather than if I just copy what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, in the beginning, we all copy. That's just the way we learn. We copy from other artists' works, or copy photograph these days. Obviously, it's easier to grab a photo. But if you're searching, if you really are searching, then you're craving more. And as you crave more, that's how knowledge is built. Knowledge is built, you know, on these cravings and searchings. And you're also looking at, obviously, other artists' works. Hopefully not to copy them, but to see, well, how that person, you know, handled like a barn or a tree or a snow scene or snow or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you get inspired, and then you try to hopefully figure out your own way how to interpret that. And the internet, you know, again, we live in the internet age, and information is so easy to get. You can punch up anything and look at it on the internet, and you have instant information in front of you. Again, I think that became more of a crutch for a lot of painters, because we get influenced now for so many angles.
Yeah.
And that's not the point of painting. Point of painting is try to figure out, you know, who you are as a painter, the why part, basically. Try to figure out the why. And you have to always ask yourself, why did I paint in the beginning?
Yeah, realism really changed because of that, because of the camera, the computer.
Yeah.
We don't see realism as we did
before
the camera. So it's,
yeah, yeah. And again, in the same time, it's a big advantage we have over, you know, artists that never had this opportunity too. So it can go both ways.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, so, but yeah, again, realism, there's nothing wrong with a tight painting. And when we talk about, when we say a realistic painting, at least in our world, that's that's when I look at it, like, oh, that's a really realistic painting. That, to me, that's more of a tighter painting. That's what I would call a more realistic painting. Not that it's a bad painting, it's just more tighter than I paint.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also have realistic paintings that verge on the abstract. They're still realistic. They're still using shapes and form, good composition.
Yeah.
But left to almost more of an abstract design rather than realism. So changes quite a bit.
Yeah, and you might, and your style could go from, I mean, I've seen painters that were looser and they tighten up too. So I don't, there's no one right or wrong way on that. Naturally, generally, we get looser. That's what I've seen in painters over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you stop with that? Some go really abstract at some point.
Right.
I don't know. That's great if that's something that you want to do. Again, if you're a professional artist making your living at your art, you know, sometimes you're scared of changing style because it would, you know, you can drop some collectors. People would not.
But, lose some sales.
But ultimately, you have to ask yourself, you know, well, I just don't want to, you know, I'm getting burnt out from this. I know I need to move on. So that's again, a question you have to ask yourself. How do I make that transition where, hey, that was a period of my life where I painted this way, now I'm painting differently. And there's been very successful painters that have done it or maybe changed mediums, you know, too. Yeah. So that's okay. But, well, we hope that we're going to include some real tight paintings we can put into the...
some images that show images examples, different ways of seeing realism. And
they're all beautiful paintings. It's just, again, they all one thing they have... All they have common, all those paintings that we'll include, is the understanding of fundamentals.
Yeah.
That's the sort of the tying, that's the bridge.
Yeah, thankfully we all don't paint the same. Everybody has a different interpretation of what's in front of them.
Yeah.
And that's what makes painting great.
Yeah. Well, otherwise it would be a very boring world if everybody would paint it the same. So, well, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Easel Talk, the podcast that takes your art to the next level. Subscribe to and review our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out our website, easelinsight.com, for more episodes and information. See you next time on Easel Talk.